Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. We've all heard those qualified news reports that begin with details about what's happening with insurgents in Iraq, but then they credit as a source some Islamist website or a message board known to be used by Al-Qaeda. Well, the name of the website's never given. Most of us have no idea what's really there. Most of us couldn't read the Arabic postings even if we knew where to look. And yet, these sites have become central to understanding terrorism today. They are the same places where insurgents will post the videos of hostages and announce responsibility for attacks. Experts who study these sites say there are now known to be some 4,000 such places on the internet. And they've become the perfect tool for people who live in the shadows. The hackers and webmasters become hard to track because they have the technical savvy to avoid detection. And the message boards are also an ideal forum for communication among the insurgents themselves. So at one level, it stands to reason that the best move would be to shut down the sites. But they're also a window in for intelligence people to monitor terrorist activities. So what's the best approach? Should these insurgent websites then be allowed to flourish, or should they be closed down? More to the point, can they be closed down? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And helping us with this on today's program, we have Rita Katz with us. She is director of the Site Institute. It's a private organization that tracks terrorist message boards and other websites. She's also the author of a book called Terrorist Hunter. Rita, it's good of you to join us.
Thank you very much.
Can I begin with the latest story that was in the news? I mentioned it a little bit earlier, the health of Al-Qaeda's supposed leader in Iraq, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. What's the latest that's being reported?
The latest is that he is very well, in good health, back, as he said, indicated in his last speech, May 31st speech, with his friends, the Mujahideen, and with his family.
And how true do you know all that to be?
Well, I don't know in what health he is currently, whether or not he is really well or not. But that's the indication that he is giving out. We have no doubt that that message has been authenticated already. We know that that audio message was posted by his top people to the message board where they usually post their information. We can't, of course, tell in what health he is. We haven't seen a video. We saw only an audio message. Is he really well? You don't know. We know that he was injured, that's for sure.
And can you tell me how you and your people sort through what's real and what's not? Because my recollection of the series of stories that came out shortly after the announcement of his injury is that there were some which were then proven to be or likely to be false, that a deputy had been appointed to take his place, and then later that was denied. How do you and your people sort out what's true and what's not?
Right, Dick. And I know 2 weeks ago was a total confusion to so many people. So many contradicting reports were said at the same hour. The way things are done today are not that easy. It's quite complicated. But in order to authenticate a message, you need to know where to go. As you indicated earlier, there are about 4,000 Islamist websites. How to know which message that is posted on this website is authenticated or not is, one, based on experience. Second is knowing what are the original message boards where al-Zarqawi or other terrorist organizations would post their messages on. And what I mean by that is, I just mentioned the word message board. For people who are not familiar with that term, is a website that contains messages from everyone who wants to post a message. It's a live organism where any member of the message board can just go and upload a message. So part of the confusion was that some message boards had messages about Zarqawi being dead and nominated his successor, etc., etc. But that message really was not posted on the official website or the message board where Zarqawi and his people would post their messages on. So that's why we didn't report about that message.
But couldn't anybody go to that official website and post whatever message they want then, Rita?
No. Yes and no. And the websites that usually they post their messages on are password protected. Uh-huh. It's only for members. long-time members where they have to be approved by the moderator of the group, by the moderator of that message board. And that message board where Zarqawi is currently posting his information on has different sections, has computer section, has Islamist issue sections, Sharia issues, politics. But it also has a section called communiques and statements. And in that section where Zarqawi and other organizations would post their messages on, members cannot post messages. It's only for the moderator, for the webmaster, that can post the messages. However, in the other sections, everyone can go and post messages. By the way, this is a new trend that we have been seeing lately, where 2 months ago, that wasn't the case.
So there would, I'm looking at a name here, and help me with the pronunciation, Abu Masera al-Iraqi?
Yeah, Abu Maisar al-Iraqi.
Now, is that the person who is marked then as the moderator or the webmaster for this al-Qaeda site?
Not really. Abu Maisar al-Iraqi is the official spokesperson of al-Qaeda in Iraq, of that Zarqawi's group, what we call today. He is, if there is a publication that is not posted by him or not being signed by him, we should not consider as an official publication. That message board, the message board where currently they're uploading their messages on, is the message is not being posted by Abu Maisara. Not that we can tell who posted the message. What it would show you is that the moderator, the webmaster of the message board, who has the approval to do anything he wants with a message board, he's the only one that can upload these messages.
So help me with something, Rita. We have done stories on this program about teenagers in, I don't know, Ann Arbor, Michigan, who download a song off one of these share sites. And, you know, within a matter of hours, the web sleuths are able to zero in on that person, that computer, and go there and find that person. Does the same thing follow here? If you apply the intelligence and the pressure, could you zero in on where al-Iraqi is? Could you zero in on people who post to these message boards?
Yes and no. It's more sophisticated than you can think. There are two things here and two options. That really takes us to the what you mentioned in the introduction, goes to the point where whether we should or should not take down these websites. One thing that you have, and especially I just said that in the past, Zarqawi and Abu Maisar al-Iraqi were not posting their messages this way. And what I meant by that is in the past, until 2 months ago, there was a website called Al-Ansar. And in that message board, Abu Maisar al-Iraqi is one of the members who would post the messages himself. Mm-hmm. So you can see that he posted the message. And in fact, everyone else could have posted a message, but it's really a password-protected site. No new members were allowed. So if you were a member in the past, you can review the messages. And then what happens next is that people, members of this message board, will start copy the messages and distribute it to other message boards. And that's how, you know, you get to have these messages all over the world. But when it comes to pinpoint to the individual that would post the message, when it comes to terrorists, it's more sophisticated. In these message boards, one of the things that is important for them to do is that their members would know how to use the internet and stay anonymous. And you shouldn't think today of terrorists using the internet as people who have no knowledge and have no idea what the government can do or what the government can subpoena and in order to find the bad guys. They know exactly how it works. They provide you with all the instructions, step by step, how you're going to go and post a message without being tracked down. Now, having said that, at the same time, what might happen sometimes is that when you go and you post a message and they provide you with information like to use the proxy server or to make sure that when you post a message and you're not familiar on how to post the message, you should email it to the moderator, and the moderator who knows how to do things will post the message. They really have a lot of ways to assist the individual who wants to become a member of these message boards. Because what happened was about a year ago, there was an individual in Jordan who sent an email, a threat death email, to one of the Jordanian officials. And within minutes, they were able to track him down, arrested him. That made a huge impact on the message boards. And they started providing a lot of information on how to use it. But what might happen is that you post a message and you didn't take all the necessary precautions that you need to take, and you didn't use the proxy server appropriately. Or what we have learned from our own study is that not all the members are using the proxy server, and that by having the websites up and running, you can actually learn about trends, about locations, and about association of individuals that attend or are members of these message boards.
The point being here that if they don't follow the instructions, the way of hiding their location, they can be caught. But if they follow those instructions, they're very difficult to track down. Is that
right? That is very much correct. But that's why I believe this is one of the reasons that the techniques is changed today. And today, Abu Maisar al-Iraqi does not post the messages himself, but the webmaster of that message board would post the message. And he knows probably how to do things better than anyone else. We are talking about technical, savvy individuals that knows how to operate these things. And in order to make it safer, Abu Maisar won't post the messages by himself anymore.
Rita Katz is with me this hour. She is the director of the Site Institute. It's an organization that tracks terrorist message boards and other websites. And it's clear from her explanation just how important these message boards and websites are for the communication, for the activity of these terrorist organizations. Seems a clear line there to shut them down so they don't have that. But on the other hand, it's also a way of finding out what the terrorists are up to. What do you think should be done? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. This hour, a conversation about dealing with those insurgent or terrorist websites, very valuable to the people who are communicating across international borders, but also very valuable to intelligence agencies. Better as a window in on that world, or better to use them to shut that world down as best as the intelligence community is able to do that. We're at 1-800-423-8255, and Rita Katz is my guest this hour. Rita, are there people with the FBI and the CIA who are all over these websites, examining every post that comes up? How carefully are they being watched?
They know that they are being watched. I believe that the FBI, I have no doubt about it, that the FBI and the CIA are monitoring these message boards. The question is how many of them are being monitored, and because you are quite limited to what you can do. And the other question that actually Mujahideen are raising lately are, how many of these message boards are actually conducted and are running by the CIA or the FBI? And you can't really tell, of course, but from my own experience in working with the FBI on these issues, I have no doubt that the FBI is on target on these issues.
So it's conceivable that some FBI mocked-up website would say, look, let's gather at the southwest corner of Mosul. We need some freedom fighters. We're going to go and take down a police station in the hopes that they'll get some people?
The FBI won't do things like that. I think they're more sophisticated. They're not going to send a message like that. But when you want to communicate regarding information about specific attack, you might post the beginning of the information, like the intro, on the internet. But then you will take it to closed doors forums, like emails or internet chat rooms that are only for members that they know each other or things like that. What is valuable, though, for the FBI, the CIA, is A, collecting the IP addresses of the people who are attending these message boards. B, is, if someone did not use all the steps that were needed for their own questions, then they can really pinpoint to the right individual who was posting these messages. And third, and I think is the most important, is to learn about the new trends, to learn and understand what might be the next steps of the terrorist organizations.
And Rita, where do you and the Site Institute fit in here? Do you work for the intelligence agencies? Do you give them information gratis when you find it? How does it work with you?
The Site Institute, a nonprofit organization, stands for the acronym of Search for International Terrorist Entities. We work for government officials. We are a totally independent organization. So I can do whatever I want. I can decide which message board I want to monitor. We can decide which messages we want to translate. However, at the same time, we have a subscription service for our members, paid subscription service, where we provide information to all our subscribers that are from intelligence agencies, corporations, anyone who wants to know and to understand what the Al-Qaeda chat rooms or Al-Qaeda message boards are talking about, communiques, statements, latest statements of Zarqawi, then we would translate them and send them out to our subscribers. Now, when it comes to issues where we see that someone is trying to contact specific individuals to carry out a specific attack, or someone is trying to steal credit card information from the internet, or anything else that we find is important, we'll immediately death threats. That's something that we share all the time with the FBI, and I know that they take the right steps to prevent that.
All right, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Rita Katz is with me this hour. We're talking about these extremist websites. We're taking a call from Crestwood, Kentucky. Sean's on the line. Hi, Sean.
Hi, I've been following the internet from before it existed, and wanted to comment on one of the things your guest said, and that's hiding your address with these proxy servers and everything is only possible if you have countries that essentially, when the message goes through, for example, the proxy server they have, that your law enforcement cannot get access, because every message has to, because of protocols on the internet, eventually have where it came from and where it's going. And if we just went like with money laundering, countries are required to abide by some kind of international protocols in cases like this with groups that very clearly target civilians, etc., terrorists. And if refused, they're frozen out of the internet domain servers. You would be able to not have these anonymous postings, but they would always be backtrackable. Now, they would use people's homes and other things, but it would really help law enforcement. And your other thing is...
But hang on a second here, Sean. What you're saying is that there is the wherewithal to do the kind of tracking that we're talking about. The question for the hour is, even if the... you know, countries or law enforcement agencies had the ability to zero in on where that message came from and where that message came from. Is it smart to do that, or is it smart to monitor it and use it as a source of information? Where do you come down on that?
I would say where it comes is you want to shut it down, because communications is always a critical part of any kind of conflict. Good communications, every military wants it.
Yeah.
And the thing is, they're able to... coordinate things just like now. They would still be missing their head trying to re-coordinate, and like they're already all coming back around again Zarqawi, because they know he's alive and he's healthy. Plus, if you shut down sites like this, it forces them into more conventional methods of communication. Like
you get them using sat phones, and you can track where those signals are coming from. Rita, what about this?
Yeah, first of all, one point that I maybe forgot to mention is this question. The most important question is, can you shut them down? I mean, you can definitely go and shut down a website or a message board for a day or two by cutting off the server or other means, but did you really shut them down? And the answer is no, because it's just going to take them a week, 24 hours, or a month, where they're going to upload that website again from a different server. And then it might be that they will move it to a country where we really cannot monitor.
Okay, but if I'm some kind of regional leader in Yemen or in northern Iraq, and the site that I'm using as a contact point to find out what's going on within the organization is shut down, that's a pretty dramatic interruption of the kind of communication that Sean's talking about, isn't it?
No, because first of all, they will be able to upload the message again. their website from a different server. Second, as I mentioned, a lot of these websites are password protected where the members have email addresses. So they will immediately notify you once the website is up and running again. Here you can find us. Once you took down websites for instance, Ansar that was used for Zarqawi for over the year, maybe even longer, the next day they started posting their information on a different website until they were up and ready to run with a totally new website. So you really didn't shut them down. And that's what you learn from your own experience, that you can take websites down. However, when one of the benefits we're having today is that a lot of the terrorist websites are actually running and using American internet servers. And that might be...
They're based here in this country?
No, they are not based in this country. They use American-based internet servers.
Okay. So does that mean that it's easier to get at them or harder, Rita?
It means that you can collect better intel information. Because if they are using an internet provider from the United States, then the government can subpoena that internet provider and see all the information about who's paying for the website. If they are using a credit card, today they use more sophisticated means. Who's running the website? Where's the information being uploaded from? Who's the webmaster? Any email addresses affiliated with the individual? So you really can learn more than just having a server or a website that runs from Pakistan.
Okay, but if these guys are so smart, they must know that as well. Why would they then not be using servers in Egypt or Britain or Denmark or someplace that's a little harder to get at?
That's very funny. The fact is that they are not using a lot of servers from the Middle East because A, it's being monitored very much by the government. B, the servers there do not provide you with the same quality that the American servers would provide you. C, when you register yourself with an American provider company, there is not much of information that the company needs to know about you. So you really can stay anonymous and do it with a third body that can register the information for you, and you really can stay anonymous.
So it's American technology and the American belief in freedom of speech, which gives them the access to use the U.S.
And
service.
You know what? This is very funny. There was one website also affiliated with the Zarqawi that was running from Europe, one of the only ones that really a hardcore Zarqawi website running and using a European server. As far as I remember, it was from the Netherlands. And one day they shut down. They had a huge message on their website saying, because of freedom of speech, we changed our website address to the following. And when we tracked down that new website address, it came that they started using an American server. Because it really comes also to the issue of freedom of speech.
Yeah. All right. Let's go back to our callers, to Scottsburg, Indiana. Alita is joining us on the line from there. Hi, Alita.
Hi. I would like to. I've been posting on Islamic websites for 3 years, ever since I found one while surfing the net, to find out what's on the minds of the Iraqis and the people there.
Are you posting in English or in Arabic, Alita?
I post in English on IslamicDigest.org.
Yeah.
And also Islam Online, and try to get a perspective of what the people think themselves, because I want to know about Islam, because I want to know what this is all about and why they hate us and this and that. And I've often wondered if I'm posting on a website that might be like the kind that you're talking about. But I find when I talk to some of these people, they hate Americans. But then I find others who want peace. They don't want the war. They hate it. And I try to find out what's really, really going on over there.
Let me just stop you there for a minute, Alita. I'd like to know from Rita if the sites that she's describing are the same ones that we're talking about on the program here.
No. That's one thing that we have to make clear, that we're not talking about all the Islamist websites. We're talking about hardcore of totally terrorist websites. website, that some of the people who participate in these websites, members of this website, would the next day provide their will and post their will on the message board, because the next day they become martyrs. I mean, we're really talking about message boards that, and websites that are clearly affiliated with terrorist organizations. So we can't go and say that, you know, all the Islamist websites are bad. No, that is definitely not the case. And of course there are Muslims who don't hate us, and of course there are Muslims who just want peace. We are talking only about those that are the small minority of them that are trying to destroy everybody's life. Look, they're killing Muslims today more than they're killing Americans.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to speak now with David Stevenson. He's principal of Stevenson Strategies. He's a specialist in the use of technology and runs a consulting firm dealing with matters of homeland security. He's joining us on the phone from his office in Medfield, Massachusetts. David, it's good of you to join us.
Thanks, Dick. Glad to be here.
I understand.
Hi, David.
You two know each other, of course.
No, I haven't run into Rita yet, but
no.
I certainly echo a lot of what she's been saying, and I actually have another twist on this, where I basically feel that with the inherent decentralization of the internet, particularly since all the communications is packet-based, and now you're having more and more iterations of this, everything from voice over IP to free Wi-Fi and things of that sort, that it is impossible for government to control that these sources of information. And as soon as you shut one down, it's going to be possible for them to come up with another one. In fact, if I were running their strategy, I would make sure that I had a couple of very benign sites that I just had in reserve, and I could shift with I had FTP new material to that in an instant, and have a whole variety of message boards on a backup basis that I could switch to.
David, let me interrupt if I can, because although you say the technology is getting more and more complicated, you're also mentioning to one of my colleagues here at The Connection that there is a pretty hardcore group of hackers, vigilantes, call them what you will, who are working to interfere with the activity of these websites, right?
That's right, Dick. I blogged a while ago about a municipal judge in a tiny town in Montana who had very skillfully, she was, I think, in her mid-30s or so, and was somewhat bored, I guess, with small-town life. She's part of a group that's very loosely based in Canada that very skillfully drew people out and was actually able to snare one of the terrorists that way, and I believe did provide some valuable intelligence. However, it seems to me that I would come down on the side that it's far more valuable to be monitoring what is happening in light of the fact that they can crop up in some totally different location almost instantaneously.
Yeah.
Far more important to be monitoring it and sharing the intelligence without tipping them off that you're onto that. And that brings me to another issue that...
Are you saying there should be some regulation for the people who are trying to hack into these sites? The people who are doing it for purely patriotic reasons, but...
Dick, you know, this goes all the way back to World War II and the plane spotters, the elderly men and the teenage boys who had the little cards with the silhouettes of the Axis planes on them and were looking and, feeling part of the thing. People want to be part of this, but the problem is, without guidance, they actually can become part of the problem. Now, I'm not saying that the government should spill the beans on what methods we are using for surveillance. And, I share Rita's perspective that, they are doing this on a very full-time basis. But there is also the chance, just due to the fact that the Internet is so ubiquitous now, that you or I are likely to be the ones to spot something that is awry. But if we don't know how to report it, and what might be valuable. Now, again, I'm not talking about providing the absolute descriptors of what kind of intelligence would be valuable, but broad descriptions of the kinds of things that government is looking for. I don't think that's going to compromise the integrity of their investigations at all, but it would provide guidance to the general public on what to be looking for. And you know what? We don't do that in general. There, and I contrast this to Israel, where, for example, there was a, granted it wasn't talking about electronic means, but they sent a brochure to every single household in Israel that told them what to be looking for in terms of cars that had been altered for bombing, people who come into a cafe in the middle of summer with a long coat on.
David, I'm going to interrupt you right there because we have to take a short break, but it's a good place to leave it for our listeners. 1-800-423-8255. Should the government be, in fact, using the power and the wisdom of hackers to help them with this? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. We're talking about that the proliferation of terrorist websites and the information that can be gleaned from them, but also how they are extremely valuable in allowing insurgents to communicate with each other. David Stevenson is with us by phone. He is principal of Stevenson Strategies. It's a consulting firm dealing with matters of homeland security. And Rita Katz is also with us. She's director of the Site Institute. It's a private organization that tracks these message boards and other websites. And Rita, just a reflection from you on what David's talking about, the people, and there are many of them with tremendous computer skills who think that they too can get involved and do something. You're in the business of trying to make sense of all this. The people who are doing it from their basement, are they making it harder or more or easier for you?
I quite agree with David. I think that this is something that needs to be monitored by the government. I mean, not monitored, but you can't have just individuals going and hacking to these sites because they believe that this is their contribution to the war on terrorism. I believe that this comes to really where a point where you need, if you have any specific information and you think they are valuable, you should work with the government. And you know, from my own experience, when you come to the government with an important lead or something, they will definitely sit and listen to you at this stage, especially when it comes to internet, because it's just the sky is the limit. There is always good to have another pair of eyes. But when it comes to just individuals going and hacking the websites and not knowing what exactly they're doing, I don't see really the benefit of it, because whatever they're going to do to that website, the next day is going to come up from a different server. So what did you do?
And David, if there was some small booklet saying, here, if look, if you're going to hack, here's what to look for, and here's who to call if you find something interesting. Do you think that there is a fair amount of muscle that could be harnessed that now is not being used?
Definitely, Dick. You know, you look at the way the web is being used for benign purposes with things like the SETI project, you know, of tracing communications from deep space, of using the power of networked computing in that regard, that I think there's tremendous possibility there if only we knew what to do. You know, I think a mundane example is I was in a Taco Bell restaurant a while ago, sitting there, and looked at this strange tape on the side of the front door. And it had, at intervals, these numbers going up from, I think, 3 to 6 or so. And I couldn't for the life of me figure out what it was. And then suddenly it dawned on me that that was a way that if somebody robbed the store, that as they exited, the employees would be able to see, oh, you know, they were exactly
5'8".
Height. Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? The same kind of thing can work on the web. And one of the things that really bothers me is the way the government really hasn't capitalized on this. Now, I must say in their defense, I haven't checked the FBI site in the last couple weeks, but since they posted a form up there for reporting any potential terrorist acts soon after 9/11, I swear to God, it looks to me like something that J. Edgar Hoover might have written, and you just did a find and replace everywhere it said John Dillinger, you replace terrorists there, that it's this form where it doesn't take into account any of the power of the interactivity of the web to do what I would call digital triage, so that it would distinguish between, I live in Plymouth, Massachusetts, a mile from the Plymouth nuclear Pilgrim nuclear plant, and it's 3 in the morning, and I just saw a bunch of armed commandos running by my window, which I bet the government would want to know that right away, yeah. which you could do. And on the other hand, some sort of, you know, low-level background, you know, I thought you might be interested in this kind of stuff. There is nothing there to educate people and to capitalize on the power of the web to expedite.
One if by land and two if by sea.
Well, you know, Dick, in fact, I'm not calling from my office in Medfield. I'm actually about a mile from the Battle Green in Lexington.
And there you go.
I literally do. My approach to this is what I call smart mobs for Homeland Security, and I literally patterned that on not the Minutemen who were hanging out on the Mexican border now, who I think are part of the problem.
Yeah.
But on what happened in 1775, where we had people who were trained in advance, knew what to do, could drop their regular routines at a moment's notice, and
lend a hand. David, I'm going to go back to our callers here. We're at 1-800-423-8255. And let's get back to the question where we started the hour. Should these insurgent websites be allowed to flourish as a way for intelligence agencies to track and figure out what the terrorist leaders are doing, or should they be hacked into and, to the best efforts, made unusable to try and slow that kind of activity? 1-800-423-TALK. And we're going to Beaufort, South Carolina. Richard's on the line. Hi, Richard.
Hi there. It's Beaufort, actually.
Oh, it's spelled wrong here. My mistake. Beaufort, nice to have you with us.
Yes. I was reminded of a dilemma in World War II when your guest brought it up, actually, that American intelligence had broken both German and Japanese codes, but often didn't act on the intelligence that we had because we didn't want the enemy to know that we had broken their codes. And I can see the parallel there in this current dilemma.
Rita, this is almost exactly what we were talking about earlier, isn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, when we talk about the stage of the insurgency groups today, you can't really compare them to the war, the Second World War. It's different because today you have a lot of insurgency groups. You have a lot of websites. You don't have one code that you need to break. Many times you don't even know where to start from. And I don't think that there will be any valuable code that you can break by hacking to one website. You can maybe see some IP addresses. You can get some information about locations and individuals. But before we continue, it's important for me to remind everyone that when we talk about government investigations, just very lately, there was a, I can't say that it's a successful indictment because it hasn't been brought to court yet, but the government was able to indict an individual by the name Babar Ahmed, who from London was running Al-Qaeda support's website. He was raising funds for Taliban. And, you know, when you look at that investigation lasted about 3 to 4 years in order until the government was able to come and indict him. If someone would have just gone and hacked the site and blocked it, that would have been much more difficult for the government to continue with the investigation and continue with the indictment. I mean, eventually, he was indicted a year ago, and he's going to be extradited to the United States, and the trial is going to start. This is really one of the early cases where we're facing an internet investigation for material support.
1-800-423-8255 to Derry, New Hampshire. Mike's with us. Hi, Mike. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am.
I hear you now. What are you thinking, Mike?
Well, actually, Dick, I would like to start by referencing two great Republican presidents, not presidents, but two great Republicans who actually did care about the Constitution and respect democracy, and that's Ronald Reagan and Bob Dole. Are we ever going to be that shining beacon on a hill again, and where is the outrage? I'm very concerned, and I do agree with your guest who's talking about citizens getting involved and monitoring and surveilling, but not shutting down. And that's what's happening now with our country. Is we're having our freedom shut down. First Amendment is only an amendment, and as we've seen, George Bush is not a strict constructionist. So I don't agree, obviously, with the content of these websites, but they are valuable information to have, just as your last caller suggested about the code, the Nazi code. And along those lines, I'm wondering about the Echelon system.
Mike, let me ask you a question, if I can, though, because
sure.
if you look at Rita's website, for example, and we'll have a link to it on ours at theconnection.org. You can see that, you know, some of the stuff that they're intercepting is instructions on how to construct a bomb. Now, you can't get those instructions from Rita's website, but it's clear that, you know, that's the sort of thing that they're intercepting. And if you have websites, and this totally, it's not totally hypothetical, but if you have websites that are posting training videos and bomb making instructions and that sort of thing, do you still apply to that the freedom of speech doctrine?
Well, yes, I do. From my understanding, Rita's Institute, there's a subscription where people can have access to this information. I'm wondering, legally, with the tort reform, are they responsible in any kind of way if something were to happen and they had information and people were to get hurt?
Well, it seems like a bit of a stretch. I don't know. Rita, do you think about this?
You know, I guess we can translate whatever we find that is important for us to translate. We post the messages on our website. Whoever needs to read the full message can contact us and can receive it with a fee. But in order for us to continue our operation, we have to charge. And our subscribers get all the information, the full translation. I don't think we are.
But if you're putting up something like bomb making instructions on the website, I think one of the things that Mike is saying is, does that make you liable if somebody uses that?
Oh, no, because first of all, on the website, we don't put the whole thing. We just put a paragraph of what the manual describes. But no, even if we had posted the full manual, it would not make us liable because what we do, we did not upload the information to the internet. We are providing the servers of translating them. And the law on this issue goes to what was the intent of doing so. My intent is to educate the American public, government officials, intelligence services that this is going on. However, the individual who posted that message, the manual message on the jihadi message board, his intent was that people will use it to carry out attacks.
Right.
So that where the law goes when it comes to why you upload it. Because, for instance, CNN would post Zarqawi's message. But when it comes to a message board that upload Zarqawi's message, they will be considered terrorists. CNN will not be considered terrorists because they are reporting about it.
David Stevenson, you put together something called the Terrorist Survival Planner, this package, this database for businesses. And the further we get into this conversation, the more I'm thinking, wow, this changes so quickly. The technology that is available, the wisdom of both the good guys and the bad guys on this. I mean, how do you stay abreast of it all?
it's a constant battle, Dick. And that is one of the things also where the web is so critical that you simply couldn't do this if it wasn't for the web. And you know, I think what it is a constant dialectic. And we need to have a strategy that is that we are facing a networked enemy, Dick, mm-hmm. and we need a networked strategy. And that also means that it can't just be from the top down. You look back at 9/11, and there are, I think, a couple lessons that I drew from that. First of all, the only effective response on 9/11 was not from the government. You know, the Air Force fighters weren't scrambled in time. But was the passengers on Flight 93 who were called on their cell phones by their relatives and told what was happening, took matters into their own hands in a case like that. And we need a strategy that takes into account the fact that you and I, every time we leave the house in the morning, take with us collectively billions and billions of dollars worth of technology that is far more advanced than what government has just by virtue of government procurement cycles and all of that stuff. And
let me, if I can, David, you made a point here, and I wanted to turn this part back to Rita, if I can. David mentioned 9/11, and of course we all have strong memories of what happened on that day. If the FBI were to see on one of these sites some suggestion that something was being organized, and I really don't know how far that would go. Maybe I'm completely in imagination land on this one, but could they then shut that down, hack into the site, make it difficult for one of these sites to be used as a coordinating point?
Well, the situation before 9/11, when we talk about terrorist message boards, is not the same that is today. It was much different. You didn't have as many as you have today. You didn't have as many as terrorists as you have today with all the insurgency groups in Iraq. Not that you had less, but today you have more the use of the internet. Zarqawi, for instance, is an individual that no one was aware of, where very few people knew who Zarqawi is, and look who he is today. I mean, his messages and his information on the internet is what made him to become to one of the most wanted individuals today.
And sadly, one of the really most inspiring at the same time, right?
Very much. I mean, people do not write letters to Osama bin Laden on the internet. They would post the messages to Zarqawi because Zarqawi literally respond to these messages. Look, before 9/11, it would have been much more difficult. I mean, to stress it that the 9/11 could have stopped or something like that if the internet was monitored better, I don't think so. We do know that two hijackers did communicate on a message board, but they didn't really provide information about the 9/11. They just had a chat on the internet.
Right.
I don't see how it could have happened.
Let's go to Hardeeville, South Carolina. Pete's joining us from there. Pete, we're near the end of the program. Can I ask you to be brief for me?
Hi, just a real quick remark, and I'm in favor of monitoring.
Yeah.
I own the biggest chat directory on the internet right now, and in the days after 9/11, I started to see hits to my website looking for specific chat rooms for Afghanistan, Iraq, and Iran, and all of those hits were coming from the .mil domain, which means military personnel were using my site to look into my directory and find the chat rooms for those countries. I say leave them on, let's monitor them, and go on from there.
So you just leave it wide open. Let the military use whatever tools, technical tools they have, to try and keep track.
To intercept it rather than shut them down. Yeah, shutting them down moves them even deeper where they may not be able to get a hold of them.
Rita Katz, quick last question.
Go ahead. I just want to have a comment on this. This is a very important point. We were talking about how we or individuals that are interested were hacking to Islamic Jihadi's website. I have to say here in this forum that it's important to remember that the jihadists are monitoring all our websites. In fact, we came across a story of one of these messages, one of these password-protected message board posted information about a certain individual from the American military who was going to be stationed in Iraq. And the message was, find him and behead him. He's going to be in this military camp, etc., etc. We provided the information immediately to the department that was tied to that case. And later on, they found out that the terrorist organization were able to hack to their website.
It is a two-way street. That's the point that you're making.
Exactly. Now, my point here, and
you got to be quick, Rita. We're right at the end here.
Very quick is that we need to make sure that they read all these books about hacking, and there are many of them on the internet.
Yeah.
We need to make sure that our websites, especially when it comes to government agencies, military websites, are totally secure.
Rita, I thank you for being with us on the program today.
Thank you very much.
Rita Katz is director of the Site Institute and author of Terrorist Hunter. David Stevenson, thank you for your time as well.
Thank you, Dick. And remember that the real hero of Watergate wasn't Mark Felt. It was Frank Wills, the guard at the Watergate, who noticed the tape.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.